I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
That's my goal. That's our goal, to keep this pause going beyond tomorrow so that we can continue to see more hostages come out and surge more humanitarian relief into those in need in Gaza.
The four-day truce in Gaza has entered its final day, but negotiations are continuing to extend it. So far, Hamas has released 58 hostages who'd been held captive for 7 weeks. Israel's released 117 imprisoned Palestinian women and children. Most have been held without charge. We'll go to Israel and the occupied West Bank for the latest, then speak to a former Palestinian prisoner and a former Israeli military commando who helped found the group Combatants for Peace.
Together, we engage in nonviolent struggle against Israeli occupation and all forms of violence in this region.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Calls are mounting to extend the four-day truce in Gaza, which is now in its final day. Hamas backed the extension Sunday, as have international mediators Egypt, Qatar, and the United States. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he's open to extending the truce by one day for every 10 hostages released by Hamas. A total of 58 hostages have been released so far, including citizens of Thailand, the Philippines, and Russia. A four-year-old Israeli-American girl, Abigail Idan, was among the captives released on Sunday. 117 Palestinian prisoners have been freed from Israeli prisons during the truce. Scenes of reunited families and celebrations over the weekend offered a glimpse of hope amidst the temporary lull in fighting. In the occupied West Bank, Palestinians celebrated on the streets as their loved ones returned. This is Hanan Takatka, a mother in Bethlehem whose son was freed Friday.
It was an indescribable feeling and happiness when I heard that there was a deal, thank God. In Palestine, our joy is not complete. We are happy that our children are released, but our joy is not complete. First of all, our families, children, and beloved ones in Gaza are full of blood. At the end, we were very happy for our children, but there was a price we paid. There were other children who died.
Ahead of the prisoners' release, Israel's far-right national security minister, Itamar Ben-Gavir, banned celebrations in East Jerusalem and ordered police to raid the homes of prisoners' families. Ben-Gavir said, quote, "My instructions are clear. There are to be no expressions of joy," unquote. Some 15,000 Palestinians have been killed since Israel's assault on Gaza began on October 7th, mostly women and children. Researchers say the death rate is unprecedented in this century. The assault has also caused mass displacement and widespread destruction, including to hospitals and other essential infrastructure. Some displaced Gazans said they were barred from reentering the neighborhoods and homes they fled, barred by Israeli forces. Meanwhile, the Red Crescent said northern Gaza is finally getting an influx of aid thanks to the truce. As the fragile truce held through the weekend, Israeli forces continued deadly attacks on the occupied West Bank, killing at least 8 Palestinians, including 2 children. That's according to local health officials. At least 5 of those deaths came during another raid on the Jenin refugee camp. This is a resident of Jenin.
They enter houses and demolish them and damage them. They just inflict destruction. They did not arrest any youth from here. It is just a matter of destruction.
Over 200 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank have been killed by Israeli forces or settlers since October 7th. Police in Vermont have arrested a white suspect in the shooting of three 20-year-old students of Palestinian descent Saturday. All three survived, though one is said to have suffered much more serious injuries. Two of the men were wearing keffiyehs, and they were speaking Arabic at the time of the attack. The young men were identified as Hisham Aratani, a Brown University student, Kenan Abdelhamid of Haverford College, and Tahsin Ahmad, a student at Trinity College. The families of the victims and advocacy groups urged authorities to investigate the shooting as a hate crime amidst a spike in anti-Arab and anti-Muslim attacks in the United States. The suspect, Jason Eaton, is being arraigned today. The three young men were visiting one of their grandmothers in Burlington, Vermont. They all went to the Ramallah Friends Academy for high school. Meanwhile, the Indian American Muslim Council is calling for authorities to investigate a possible hate crime motive in the November 17th stabbing of two Muslim students of Indian origin in Fremont, California. The attacks occurred at a busy shopping and dining area in broad daylight and left cousins Syed Shadan al-Haq and Khalid bin Masood Yafai with critical injuries. The suspect, Miguel Angel Villarreal, has been charged with one count of attempted first-degree murder. Here in New York, over 1,000 peaceful protesters held a sit-in Sunday at the entrance to the Manhattan Bridge, halting traffic to downtown Brooklyn. Protesters led by Jewish Voice for Peace unfurled banners reading, "Let Gaza live," and "The whole world is watching," as they sat in the roadway chanting, "Up with liberation, down with occupation." Their protest came 3 days after protesters disrupted the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade to demand an end to U.S. support for Israel's occupation and bombardment of Gaza. Protesters wore jumpsuits covered in fake blood and glued themselves to the street, briefly displaying banners reading "Free Palestine" and "Genocide Then, Genocide Now," before police moved in to arrest or detain them. In Seattle, the city council passed a resolution backing a ceasefire, the largest U.S. city to do so. But Seattle City Council member Kashama Savant, who proposed the resolution, called it watered down after it removed condemnation of the Israeli military, the occupation of Palestine, and U.S. funding for Israel. Elsewhere, tens of thousands of Cubans, led by President Miguel Díaz-Canel, marched Thursday to the U.S. Embassy in Havana, accusing the United States of supporting Israel's genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. In Glasgow, Scotland, the BBC has been accused of censorship after the network edited calls for a Gaza ceasefire out of its coverage of an awards ceremony. This is BAFTA-winning director Ailey Munro, who won for her short film A Long Winter, but had her acceptance speech cut from BBC's edited version posted online.
We've got a responsibility to elevate the world's most important stories, and we want to take this opportunity tonight to say that we stand in solidarity with everyone in Palestine.
Meanwhile, Israel has summoned the ambassadors of Belgium and Spain after their country's leaders spoke at the Rafah border crossing between Egypt and Gaza Friday, condemning Israeli attacks against Palestinian civilians. This is Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez.
Absolutely necessary to establish a lasting humanitarian ceasefire to reverse the catastrophic situation that the people of the street are going through.
In New York, the former director of NYU Langone Hospital's Cancer Center has filed a lawsuit after he was fired for sharing racist cartoons of Arab people on social media, as well as several messages against Palestinians, including one questioning the scale of the death toll in Gaza due to Israel's nonstop bombardment. Dr. Benjamin Neal is accusing NYU Langone Health of violating city and state human rights laws. His firing came after NYU Langone first removed a Palestinian medical resident from one of its hospitals. Dr. Zaki Masood posted messages on social media in solidarity with Palestine. Neil responded saying he had been, quote, offered up as a sacrificial lamb so NYU Langone could claim impartiality. In the Netherlands, the far-right Islamophobic populist Geert Wilders has vowed to become the next Dutch prime minister after his Freedom Party won the most votes in last week's parliamentary election. But Wilders will first have to make agreements with at least two other parties to form a government. Other Dutch politicians have expressed reticence or outright refused to back Wilders, who has advocated banning the Quran, prohibiting Islamic schools and mosques, and denying entry to asylum seekers. In 2017, he referred to Moroccan immigrants as scum during a campaign event. He's also made anti-trans remarks. Wilders' victory has rocked the mostly liberal nation, and European neighbors are also facing threats of a shift to the far right. Protesters took to the streets of Utrecht on Thursday evening.
This is needed because my kids, adults, a lot of people woke up in this country and we are worried if they are still welcome here. This is not the country I fell in love with, which I love so much. The country I love is a country in which we hold each other tight and live together.
In other protests, four Greenpeace activists jumped into the Parliament pond in The Hague to protest Geert Wilders, who's threatened to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement and slash spending on the climate crisis. Ukraine's military says it shot down 71 of 75 drones launched by Russia Saturday in what officials are calling the largest such attack since Russia's invasion early last year. At least two people were injured in Kyiv, where falling debris sparked fires at residential buildings and kindergarten. The Russian drone attacks came just days after U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin visited Kyiv, where he announced another $100 million in military aid for Ukraine. The United Nations reports over 10,000 civilians have been killed in Ukraine since Russia invaded. In Dublin, Ireland, hundreds of far-right protesters fought street battles with police Thursday in riots that erupted after a knife attack at a school that left five people injured, including three children. Police say the rioters were driven by misinformation about the knife attack, which was blamed on an immigrant. The BBC reports the attacker was, in fact, an Irish citizen who's lived in Ireland for 20 years. Anti-immigration protests erupted in Ireland this year after the government received more than 140,000 immigrants, its highest total in 15 years. Thousands of people took to the streets and cities around the world Saturday to mark the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. An estimated 50,000 people turned out in Rome as protesters demanded justice for a 22-year-old student who was recently killed by her ex-boyfriend in a case that's rocked Italy. In Guatemala, demonstrators wrote out the number 438 with candles in a tribute to the women who've been killed so far this year. Meanwhile, in Argentina, women condemned the agenda of the newly elected president, far-right libertarian Javier Milei.
I think everything the new government of Javier Milei stands for infringes on the rights we have won. The right to abortion, the fight against patriarchal violence, and even the fight for gender equality in the workplace. I am convinced that we have hard times ahead.
In Australia, police arrested over 100 climate activists who took part in a two-day blockade of the world's largest coal port. Thousands of activists participated in the blockade, occupying the port of Newcastle by swimming or kayaking in the port shipping lane. Australia is the world's second largest exporter of coal. 97-year-old Reverend Alan Stewart was one of the detained activists. Organizers say he's the oldest person ever arrested and charged in Australia. Reverend Stewart spoke to reporters after the action.
Whatever happens to me doesn't matter, but what happens to the climate, because the climate is going to affect future generations, my grandchildren and great-grandchildren and so on.
In Oregon, thousands of teachers are expected to return to work today after reaching a historic tentative agreement with the Portland Public Schools. The deal reached Sunday came more than 3 weeks after teachers at 81 Portland area schools walked out on strike. The Portland Association of Teachers Union said the tentative deal had secured key wins, including demands for higher wages, class size limits, and more time to plan lessons. Thousands of Amazon workers across Europe went on strike on Black Friday, one of the busiest shopping days of the year, protesting the retail giant's working conditions and demanding fair wages. The global campaign Make Amazon Pay said strikes and protests would take place from Friday through today in at least 30 countries. In Coventry, England, over 1,000 Amazon warehouse workers walked off the job Friday, blocking the facility's entrance and preventing trucks from leaving. This is a trade union leader.
In the protest here, we've got people joining us from Germany, from the US, from Italy. There are also Spanish workers that are out on strike today. This is now a global wake-up call for Amazon. They can't keep ignoring the concerns of these workers and the workers in warehouses right across the world. It's clear that this is a huge, momentous thing that Amazon just need to listen to.
And Pablo Yoruba Guzman, the visionary former Minister of Information of the Young Lords and longtime print and television reporter, has died of a heart attack. In 1969, Guzman co-founded the New York chapter of the predominantly Puerto Rican radical group, the Young Lords, which fought against police brutality, racism, U.S. imperialism, and militarism. The Young Lords also provided health care, child care, and breakfast to impoverished people, most of them Black and Latino. Pablo Guzman went on to write for publications including The Village Voice and Rolling Stone, and spent nearly two decades at the New York station WCBS. His longtime friend, Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez, called Guzman the best street reporter on TV. We'll have more on Pablo Guzman tomorrow on Democracy Now! And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, the four-day truce in Gaza has entered its final day, but negotiations are continuing to extend it. We'll go to Israel and the occupied West Bank for the latest on the hostage and prisoner releases.
طفل نبتت بين أصابعه النار طفل يكتب فوق جدار طفل نبتت بين أصابعه النار أيتها الخوذات البيضاء حذار من طفل نبتت بين أصابعه النار من طفل يكتب فوق جدار يكتب
Child by Umaima Khalil and Marcel Khalife. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The four-day truce in Gaza has entered its final day, but negotiations are underway to extend it. So far, Hamas has released a total of 58 hostages who've been held captive for the 7 weeks. 39 of the freed hostages have been Israeli citizens. Hamas also released 17 Thai workers, a Filipino worker, and an Israeli Russian. Since the truce began, Israel's released 117 Palestinian prisoners, mostly women and children, including many who'd been held without charge. One of the first hostages released was the 85-year-old Holocaust survivor, Yaffa Adar. She was captured from her home in the kibbutz near Oz. Her granddaughter, Adva Adar, spoke Sunday.
I can say that she's deaf, and I can say that she said that she was thinking about the family a lot, and that it helped her survive, and that she could hear the voices of the great-grandchildren calling her and that it gives her a lot of power, and that she's now trying to realize what's happening here, and about a lot of friends and neighbors that are either dead or kidnapped from the kibbutz, and about Tamir, her oldest grandson, that is also hostage, and that she has no house to return.
In the occupied West Bank, crowds gathered to celebrate the release of Palestinians held in prison. This is Nasrallah Alawar, one of the Palestinian teenagers released.
Prison guards made us starve. They used to bring us 2 patches of bread for each cell, which is not enough. There were also children, 11 and 12 years old, with us. And it wasn't enough food for them. God only knows how bad the situation was.
Health officials in Gaza now say the death toll from Israel's bombardment has reached nearly 15,000. The New York Times is reporting the rate of civilians killed in Gaza by Israel has been far higher than in recent wars in Ukraine, Iraq, Syria, and Afghanistan. The New York Times reports more than twice as many women and children have already been reported killed in Gaza in the last 7 weeks than have been confirmed killed in Ukraine since Russia launched its attack nearly 2 years ago, though the exact death tolls in both conflicts are unknown. Earlier today, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu visited Israeli troops in Gaza and told them Israel will continue until the end. Nothing will stop us. We're joined now by two guests. We go to Jerusalem, where we're joined by Orly Noy, Israeli political activist and editor of the Hebrew language news site Local Call. She's also the chair of B'Tselem's executive board. Her new piece for 972 magazine is What Israelis Won't Be Asking About the Palestinians Released for Hostages. Tala Nasser is also with us, a lawyer with the Palestinian prisoner and human rights organization Adamir. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Let's begin with Orly Noy. If you can talk about this temporary truce that could end today or possibly will continue. Israel says for each day that Hamas releases at least 10 hostages. What this 4-day respite has meant, who has been released, Orly?
Thank you, Amy, so much for having me. As soon as the exchange of prisoners deal was agreed upon, Israel came up with a list of 300 Palestinian prisoners, almost all of them minors, with a few women included, that would be the pool to be released throughout the ceasefire. When you look thoroughly at the names and the charges, as you said, first off, many of them were never charged with anything. I mean, the numbers are incredible. The latest data from the beginning of November talk about more than 6,800 Palestinians, political prisoners, what Israel refers to as security prisoners, more than 2,000 of them through administrative detention. It means that not only they've never been convicted with anything, they've never been charged with anything, so never had the opportunity to defend themselves. You look at minor Palestinian teenagers who've been arrested for throwing stones at police jeeps or army jeeps. One of the names in that list is in prison just simply for calling with a group of his friends Allahu Akbar. Yes, God is great. Another Palestinian woman has been sitting in jail for allegedly intending to carry out an attack, not even doing anything in practice. Others have been charged with attempts to carry out stabbing attacks or did so, but mildly injured policemen and women. So you see that the charges are incredibly minor, but what this list really allows is the sense of how central the tool of incarceration is in the Israeli project of the occupation and oppression of the Palestinian people.
And talk about the Israeli hostages and others, a Thai, Filipino hostage, Russian-Israeli hostage was released.
So, of course, I mean, there's these past 3 days with the release of the hostages have been really a sort of a national celebration after what are maybe the darkest days that Israelis can remember. There was a very anxious anticipation for their return, especially the children, whom the Israeli entire society became to know by name, each of the children that have been held as hostages. So there's been a lot of anxiety in anticipation for their return. They've been greeted with a national embrace. And they, of course, went immediately to receive medical treatment, those who needed, but a medical checkup for all of them. But this is just the beginning of their journey back to life, because many of them don't know what happened since they went to captivity. Many of them lost immediate family members, and they are just now learning about it. So it's a very bittersweet moment for them and for the Israeli society as a whole.
Now, from the beginning, it was said that Americans or Israeli Americans would be released. It was only yesterday that the little 4-year-old Abigail Adan was released. Both her parents were murdered. She ran as a 3-year-old. It's astounding. She turned 4 in captivity to her neighbor's house. And there, Abigail was captured along with the mom and her 3 kids. I think her oldest daughter, and the husband were murdered. And then they were all taken into captivity. She is the first American to be released. And some are speculating that Hamas is holding off on Americans so that Biden will put pressure on Netanyahu to continue the ceasefire.
We are being told so, and it actually makes some sense because it is almost ironic that while Israel is incarcerating Palestinian children for throwing stones, at the same time, The only lesson that it teaches the Palestinians is that the only way to actually release Palestinian prisoners is through such heinous crimes, such as the one that Hamas carried out on October 7th. The amount of Palestinian children, women, minors, and others in the prisons, Without any due process, without an ability to really honestly protect themselves from, is such that right now it seems that their only hope is through such actions, again, horrible, violent, heinous actions, but taken by the Hamas, but Israel just doesn't show any other way for Palestinians to be able to resist the occupation, which they have the right to, without spending the rest of their lives in the Israeli prisons.
Tala Nasser, I want to ask you about what's happening on the streets right now. I want to go back to what Ben-Gvir, the far-right cabinet minister, said. On Thursday, the Israeli Minister of National Security, Ben-Gvir, instructed police to use an iron fist against a